I've been asked to talk about the Swedish model, as mentioned, the criminalization of the purchase of sexual services, and also about the Swedish, the government evaluation of this legislation. Also about some new penalties imposed 2016. And the question is, has demand been reduced or displaced? But before I do that, I want to apologize to the translators because I may not follow the manuscript that I had to submit. So my I beg for forgiveness. Yes, I'm sure most of you are very familiar with Swedish legislation on regarding trafficking and prostitution. Human trafficking is, of course, in accordance with the Palermo Protocol and other relevant international instrument criminalized in Sweden. And buying sex is criminalized, but selling sex is not. Pimping, procuring, and operating brothels are illegal. And the Swedish law came into force 1999 and was evaluated 2010. And the proposal to criminalize the purchase of sexual services was part of a much broader governmental bill on violence against women. The bill proposed a large number of measures in different social sectors to combat violence against women and sexual harassment in working life. And according to the bill, one issue that was closely related to that of violence against women and lack of gender equality was the issue of men who purchased sexual services, usually from women, namely the issue of prostitution. And the most important insight regarding the issue of prostitution presented in the bill was that attention must be directed to the buyers. It was a matter of a shift in perspective, which can be summarized by stating the obvious and what we've been talking about this morning. If there was no demand, there would be no prostitution, or been said already. If there was no persons ready to exploit other persons, there would be no human trafficking. Another important point that was made in the legislation was the view that most of those who are in prostitution are not doing this voluntarily. I said most of them. Giving a choice, most of those in prostitution would choose another way to earn their living. And I guess that many of you also are familiar with the Swedish law and the evaluation and the findings. I want to start by saying, and that was also stated by the evaluator, that it's not that easy to evaluate the law, this kind of purchase of sexual services. It's complex, multifaceted social phenomena, and it occurs in part in secret. And also, you know, I said the law came into force in 1999, increased internalization and also the internet as new arena for prostitution also made it difficult to assess its prevalence. But the findings were that street prostitution was cut in half through after the prohibition came into force. The proportion of men reporting that they had paid for sex decreased substantially after the law came into effect. Some studies suggest that it fell by half. Increased public support for the ban. Surveys were conducted before and after criminalization was introduced. Judging by this result of four population-based opinion pools, there has been a change of attitude with regard to the purchase of sexual services. In the three surveys done after the ban was introduced, more than 70% of those who are asked have a positive view of the ban. And it was also concluded that Sweden has a much smaller market for human traffickers for sexual exploitation than many other European countries have. I've been in this function for almost a year now, and I've heard several times people talk about the Swedish legislation, saying things about the consequences of it that is plain wrong. And I think that might be one of the reasons why my feminist government decided to have this function within the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. For example, that there is more violence against them who are in prostitution today than it was before the law. Let me tell you that this is plain wrong. On the contrary, we have not had one, for instance, not one murder of a prostitute since the law came into force, but what's also important, not even one violent crime against someone in prostitution reported since the law came into force. Some time ago, I was able to join a police team in Sweden working 100% with issues regarding prostitution. And, you know, interviewing them, talking to them, they say that the law really, really works. There are fewer buyers, and there are fewer in prostitution, and it's very easy for the police to approach those who are selling sex. These persons who are selling sex are not afraid at all to talk to the police. In their opinion, the police opinion, those who are arguing that the law makes it more dangerous for women, totally wrong. They mean that the law actually protects those who are selling. I mean, if I were to go out and buy sex in Sweden today, I would be, first of all, very afraid of getting caught. I would probably, you know, I would lose my face, of course, but I would get fined, and I would probably lose my job too, most probably. What happens is that very few try to you know, make noise when they go buy sex. They are very careful about it, and because they know that if I do anything to the one who is selling sex, she or he can call the police, and the police will come, and they will not take away the person who is selling. They will take me as a buyer. Yes. Laws and paragraphs that prohibit trafficking and prohibit buying sex are not enough, of course. Swedish model, and this is very important, is more than just these provisions. The model includes the providing of support services to help exit, and also requires close cooperation between police, social services, prosecutors, migration officers, and NGOs. And of course, having these organizations working closely together is one key element. Another key element is, like I mentioned, to have, you know, good support system and exit programs for those who have been trafficked and for those who are in prostitution. Getting different authorities to work together around this was at the start kind of hard, but the way we arranged it in Sweden is that we have a national coordinator that are facilitating the cooperation between the national authorities and also between the authorities and the NGOs, facilitating a platform for discussions, sharing knowledge, but also to work together on, you know, for example, manuals on how to identify victims of human trafficking and so on. Switching over to the governmental inquiry that evaluated the ban against purchase of sexual services, proposed that the maximum penalty for the purchase of sexual services should be raised. The reason: variations among different sexual purchase offenses are taken into account far too infrequently when deciding on a penalty. It was pretty much the same penalty, whatever situation it was. And therefore, the governmental inquiry proposed that the maximum penalty for the purchase of sexual services should be raised from 6 months imprisonment to imprisonment for 1 year. And the Swedish parliament decided as proposed, and the new law came into force 1st of July 2011. And in September 2014, the government decided to put in place a new governmental inquiry called the 2014 Human Trafficking Inquiry. And the task for the inquiry was to review current practice to clarify the application of human trafficking provisions and analyze how it has developed since 2010. Highlight and analyze whether there are any particular problems with interpretation or other difficulties in applying the penalty provisions. Consider whether there is a need to clarify or otherwise amend the provision on human trafficking offenses. and review the scales of penalties for human trafficking and procuring. The inquiry was also asked to evaluate what impact increase that I just mentioned from 2011 of maximum penalty had had, with the aim of ensuring that the penalty in serious cases fully corresponds to the seriousness of the crime, and also to review the scale of penalties for the purchase of sexual acts from children and consider an increase of the maximum penalty. I'm only going to comment on the findings of the evaluation of what impact the increase of maximum penalty for the crime purchase of sexual services have had. And the purpose, as mentioned, was to create greater scope for more nuanced assessment of penal value in serious cases. But according to statistics from the Swedish National Council for Crime Prevention, BRÅ in short, and the judgments that the inquiry obtained, it appears that the assessment of penal value and choice of penalty remains the same, despite stricter penalties, the stricter penalties that was introduced in 2011. It is very unusual for the penalty to be set to anything else than other than a fine. And actually, I don't know of any case that that has been led to imprisonment. The inquiry assessment is that despite the stricter scale of penalties for the purchase of sexual services, this has not been coming to reality. So this inquiry proposed that the penalty provision should be divided into degrees and that a gross offense is introduced to purchasing sex in Sweden. And this has been out for a public hearing now, and there are many people arguing against doing this, dividing this penalty, because they're afraid that that would lead to a priority from the police only to prioritize the gross offense, so to say. I think the government is going to turn over this bill to Parliament within a few months, but I don't know if they are going to listen to these voices, these concerns, or not. I'm going to start summarizing. Like I said, evaluating the effects of the ban of the purchase of sexual services was a difficult task. But the Swedish government and also researchers in Sweden who work with this issue agree. The Swedish ban has reduced demand for girls and women to sexually exploit. The government, the political parties, and a strong majority of the Swedish people are pro the law, both because of its results when it comes to curbing prostitution, but also because the law enhances gender equality, human rights, and also because it's believed to be an effective instrument to fight human trafficking for exploitation. And to be short, as my Minister for Gender Equality said about 2 weeks ago when there was an open debate in Security Council at the UN, she said, prostitution is always sexual exploitation, and we should do everything to not create legal markets for sexual exploitation. The last question to be answered, has the demand been reduced or displaced? Well, it has most definitely been reduced in Sweden, but of course there are Swedish people going to other countries buying sex, and exactly how many they are, it's hard to assess. And there is actually a proposal, like the Norwegian law, to make it illegal for Swedish citizens to buy sex abroad as well. This is also being a big discussion in Sweden, if this would be effective or not. And most think that it would not. But given that the Swedish law on prohibiting buying sex have really had a change of mindset for people in Sweden, it's believed that this could be one of the good things with a law like that. And also putting this provision in the Swedish law would force Swedish companies in their code of conduct to really work on this with their employees going abroad. So we'll see if this becomes a law or not. My last remark, and that's a remark that that Mirja Vassiliadou often do when she's talking about this. Most of you probably know her. She's the EU coordinator of human trafficking. She says, follow the money. That's what we should do. And, you know, ask ourselves the question, who are profiting from allowing prostitution? We know that, I heard a figure a week ago, that the sex industry's turnaround is about $3,000 a second. So, of course, there's a lot of money in this, and a lot of strong lobbying for not making the market lesser, so to say. And the last thing I would like to say is was from a conversation with a minister in Cambodia that I met, and we were talking about human trafficking, and we're talking about the TIP report that the U.S. State Department do every year, where they assess all countries what they do on human trafficking, and the focus in this TIP report is, and that's super important, of course, the rule of law and what law agencies are doing to catch perpetrators and so on. But she said the focus of the State Department TIP report makes it's always us, third world countries, poor countries who are ending up on the watch list. We who don't have strong law agencies and so on. Wouldn't it be interesting to have a report like that solely focus on demand, what rich countries are doing to reduce demand? And she said, I'm sure that there would be a lot of other countries on top of the watch list then. I'm going to stop there and just, you know, leave it open for questions. Yeah, thank you.